it's a cliche at this point to compare cons to just the spirit of America in general. You know, it's this country was founded on fake it till you make it. There is something very American about moving to this new country and pretending you're someone else and making your fortune.
How does the daughter of a railroad hand become a millionaire in an age when women couldn't even open bank accounts? If you're Cassie Chadwick, the answer is you pull off one of the most audacious scams in history. A fraud that took millions from US banks and saw the richest man in America turn up at her trial. On this episode of Scammapalooza, I talk to Tori Telfer, author of Confident Women, about Chadwick's extraordinary rise to wealth, her downfall, and why this incredible con artist isn't better remembered today. If you enjoy the episode, you can pick up a copy of her book at her website, toritelford.com. And you can also tell your friends about Scammapalooza. It's the only way people are going to find out about it. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson, and this is Scammapalooza. When you sat down to write this book, was it something where you already knew that, like, you chose the topic of women con artists, and I'm just going to pick my favorites? Or did it just happen that you kept having these stories coming up and you wanted to sort of bring them all together?
I think I went from the broader idea to the more specific stories because I knew there had to be female con artists out there, and I knew of a couple, but the stories in my book really aren't very, very broadly known at all. They were in their time. These women were mostly famous when they were caught. But no. So yeah, I was like, oh, female con artist sounds really fun. And then I went digging. And I pitched the book during the time when Anna Delvey and Elizabeth Holmes were, well, they're still big, but this was a couple years ago. So those stories were just starting to be big. So people were thinking of female con artists. It felt like for the first time in a while. And I didn't even end up including those women in my book because there had been so much written about them. But that was kind of the zeitgeist at the time.
Are there any things that connect them together as women and as con artists? Or is it just that they happen to be women and also con artists at the same time?
Sure. Well, they are. All the women in my book use their femaleness in their cons, I would say. They're not doing the exact same cons as their male counterparts and just happen to be women. You know, they are doing female things. So they're the woman we're about to talk to today, you know, she played the part of a rich wife in order to con. So things like that. So yeah, I think that female con artists do have sort of, there is something that bind their femininity or whatever, the fact that they are women does bind them together. And as far as their cons, no, their cons are all pretty different, I would say. But there are some similarities, you know, they're all clever. They're all obsessed with having a bunch of different names. They're all sneaky. They're all charming.
And I think when a lot of people think of female con artist or using their femaleness, the first thing that people's minds can go to is that idea of a femme fatale, sort of, you know, the right. Kind of the classic honey trap, the woman is going to seduce a man and, you know, take all his money.
Yes. And actually I'm looking at my table of contents now, but I don't have any cliche femme fatales in here. I have women who married a lot or dated a lot, and that was part of the con. But yeah, none of these are women out of a James Bond novel or whatever, the classic honeypot. And in fact, it's interesting, some of them, again, the woman we're going to talk about today, weren't even very conventionally attractive and yet were able to get a lot of men to fall in love with them or to follow them somehow. So I think the femme fatale archetype is kind of limiting, honestly. It's like these women were so much more than that, or they were more skilled than that.
Yeah. Something I did notice about the women in the books is that they did tend to they seem to be trying to work a system that wasn't really set up for them.
Sure. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. They were they were making their own way.
Yeah.
In the world. It wasn't legal, but yeah, they were doing what they could to survive in some cases.
So today we're going to talk about Cassie Chadwick, which I thought, yeah, I know this story, and then realized Cassie Chadwick wasn't even her real name. I've thought of her as Cassie Chadwick, and I think in your book you've referred to her as Cassie Chadwick.
I do.
But she was born Elizabeth.
Yes, Elizabeth Bigley.
and she was
Canadian.
And from fairly average upbringing by the sounds of it, is that right?
Yeah, average to poor, I think. She was certainly nothing fancy about her childhood, and she had six siblings, and she didn't get much of an education. She wasn't given much, but her sister did say that from a very young age she was obsessed with wealth and a mania to acquire, I think was the way the sister phrased it. So she started conning pretty young, wearing disguises and pretending to be an heiress and things like that.
And that obsession with wealth, was that an obsession with money or more an obsession with the trappings of wealth? Because there's a lot of con artists who, when they say they wanted to be rich, what they actually meant was they wanted to be seen as rich. They wanted to have the fur coats and the top hats and the fast cars. Is that what we're talking
about? Yeah, great question. She was certainly obsessed with the trappings. She did wear a lot of jewelry, fur coats, rich, nice gown, but I think that she did have there. It was a mania, like her sister said, for money. There was something odd about it in that she, well, we're jumping ahead now, but she married a wealthy man, and she, so she truly was wealthy. And then she kept conning, and she could have gotten away with it if she had just stopped and fled the country, but she kept going. And I just kind of read that as an obsession with wealth. She went far beyond the point of I need this money to survive, or even I'd like this money to have fur coats. She just kept trying to swindle banks out of money.
Yeah,
it was like an addiction or something. So
yeah, that's right. It reminds me of Charles Ponzi, the original Ponzi scheme guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He had the same sort of situation where he was, like a Ponzi scheme is always going to collapse at some point. But he got to a point where there were literally people at his gate, screaming, "Where's my money? Where's my money?" And he came out and said, "Don't worry, I've got this sorted," and had the opportunity to flee the country, like exactly the same sort of thing, and then didn't, stuck around because just
thought,
I'll just keep going, just one more,
It's like a gambling personality or something.
Yeah, that's right. There's never, it's like when you see the billionaires who go to the casino despite having more than enough money because they just want to keep gambling. So you said she married rich. How does a poor girl marry rich at that? And when was she born? So we should probably set the time.
She was born in Canada in 1857, and she got into trouble in Canada through various schemes, stealing an organ and so on, trying to get a fake mustache made out of her own hair, the usual.
Of course. Classic teenage hijinks.
Classic teenage hijinks. So she had to flee, to Cleveland for a new start, which is a city in America, in Ohio. And she did some low-level cons in America. She did some fortune-telling. She ran a sketchy establishment that may or may not have been a brothel. She spent some time in the penitentiary, 10 years, actually. So she was kind of bopping around, trying her cons out. Had a husband or two before that. And then finally she meets and marries this, was he a doctor? Yeah, Dr. Chadwick, who was from this prestigious old money family in Cleveland, so not only wealthy, but respectable. And it's unclear exactly how they met. She had this establishment that may have been a brothel, like I said, and it seems like he might have visited her there. He says something like, I had this pain in my leg and she taught me this massage and cured it. You know, they deny that it was any sort of sexual, you know, sex work transactional kind of meeting.
Yeah.
Just that it was a simple leg massage. so who knows? But she was, we know from many sources, many reports, she was a charming, kind of intoxicating woman. The pictures of her are super unflattering. They're not even photos. They're just drawings, you know. So to us today, she doesn't look like anything intoxicating. But yeah. I think that however she met Dr. Chadwick, she clearly had a lot of influence over him and became his wife. At, you know, she's like 40 or something by then. So it was a very, again, going back to the femme fatale idea, it was not a femme fatale situation on the surface. But she did charm him and entrap him, I guess. Although they seem to have a great marriage, I'm going to be honest. It does. She seemed to really respect and love him.
I think that's often, yeah, that's often the case where you see those kind of relationships and you go, oh, yeah, that person's just marrying that person for the money.
Sure.
But then they also still have like a good relationship as well on top of that. So they're not, exactly. They're not mutually exclusive, I guess. Yeah,
I think you're right.
You can do. But I know my wife married me for my looks, and but we still have a good relationship.
Right, exactly.
Of course. Yeah.
As a writer, I know my husband chose me for my money and
yes. Yeah,
well, the millions look, that every book
absolutely
deal gets you.
Yeah, well, I'm a writer and a podcaster, so you can imagine how much money I've got.
Exactly.
And speaking of money, this was the Gilded Age, right? This is the time. The Gilded Age is an American, a point in American history when, is this right? When for the first time, America was suddenly the big mover, sort of industrial world. Like it took over from Britain. Is that right?
It sounds right. And yeah, I mean, it was like the railroads, right?
Yeah.
We had the big rich American families like the Vanderbilts and so on. Was it the robber baron age?
Yeah, that's it. Do you know what? My entire knowledge of the Gilded Age comes from watching the first two episodes of the HBO series, and that, you know, that's all I've got. So
I just did a Google of the robber barons and it sounds like you're right.
Because we'll get to Carnegie obviously in a little bit, but Andrew Carnegie was you know one of the early American billionaires or multimillionaires, I guess. And that's all it's part of that. So I guess she perhaps wasn't alone in that kind of pursuit of wealth and that obsession with wealth. The whole country was kind of, you know, starting to think about those kind of things.
Definitely. And, you know, it's a cliche at this point to compare cons to just the spirit of America in general, you know, it's, but I'll do it anyway. You know, this country was founded on like a fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
You know, kind of go out there and, I mean, think about the gold rush. There is something very American about moving to this new country and pretending you're someone else and making your fortune.
I'm just doing an episode at the moment on the Music Man, you know, the musical. Yeah.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah. And we just realized we've been talking about it, how many sort of those classic American musicals are about con artists and con artist types and song and, you know, the real sort of classic snake oil salesman, song and dance man, that real thing seems like a large part of American culture. I can say that because you've already said it.
And yes. So you can't insult me.
Brought it up, you're a nation
say
of swindlers. You're a nation of grifters since you mentioned it first.
Exactly. I mean, who did we just have for president?
That's right. Sure. Again, you said it, not me.
That's fine. You can't offend me.
So she's got money now. She's got wealth. She's got a happy marriage. Did she have kids?
She had a son from a previous marriage.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, we don't know a lot about him.
Okay. And so at this point, though, she decides, instead of going, well, I've got what I want, I can just relax. She's like, no, I need to up the ante. Yes. I need to, you know, since I'm wealthy, I now need to pull bigger scams. Is that the mindset?
Yes. Well, first of all, I need to fact check myself. She had a son from a previous relationship, marriage. Okay. Not that anyone's probably screaming at me, but I have to say it. Okay. So
a lot of Cassie Chadwick stands in the comments going, excuse me.
Excuse me. So yes, she doesn't relax at all. She does very much enjoy her husband's wealth, and she becomes this benevolent figure in Cleveland. She's kind of trying to buy her way into the hearts of the old money. She gives 8 of her closest friends grand pianos. She takes their daughters to Europe and just splurges on them. She's very generous to her servants, to the local butcher boy. I mean, she's just kind of waltzing around town, spending. When the store owners see her coming, they're like, yes, Cassie's coming, pull out all the diamonds, you know, because she's the type, she will go into your jewelry shop and you'll show her your tray of rings and she'll say, I'll take them all. So, you know, mega spending, compulsive, I would say, compulsive spending, more than she needed. So she's doing that, and she's also continuing to swindle banks, which is the big thing that she's most famous for, that and Andrew Carnegie. But she basically, you know, goes into banks and asks for loans, and she looks like a wealthy wife. She is a wealthy wife. So she kind of sobs a little and says, oh, it's, you know, I don't tell my husband, but I spent too much. I overdrew my account. Can you just loan me some money? I'm good for it. And so she does get loaned these large sums by bankers, you know, $40,000 and so on. And keep in mind, this is back at the, you know, the 1900 or whatever. That's a ton of money.
Yeah.
It's still a lot of money.
Were those stories true? I mean, was she sort of hiding this from her husband, or?
Well, I mean, he certainly was shocked when she was arrested. So he didn't know that she was conning. As far as the, you know, don't tell my husband that I overdrew the account, I don't think those were true, because he clearly let her have access to all the money she wanted. Like, just, and what she was doing with money, she redecorated their entire house on a whim. She was giving him elaborate presents. There's no way he didn't know that she was a big spender. So I think she was pulling a sob story on the bankers when she was kind of pretending that her husband would be angry with her. That's my educated guess. And so it turned out to be, I guess it's not a Ponzi scheme, but it was like a snake eating its tail situation, where in order to pay back one banker, she would borrow from another banker. And in order, you know, so she was never able to, it was never going to end well for her, just like a Ponzi scheme. You know, she was always going to be in debt. But she just kept it going and going and going. And she had some specific bankers that she really took for a ride, and, you know, just continually borrowing from them. And they would come to her weeping, like, Cassie, please, you gotta start paying this loan back. And somehow they would end up loaning her even more. And that goes back to how convincing she clearly was.
I mean, and that's something, again, you know, Charles Ponzi and Bernie Madoff as well, same thing. Mm-hmm. People would come mm-hmm. back and say, you know, yes, I've made you this money, why don't you reinvest it?
Yes. You know, I don't know exactly why she plan to do it, but my guess would be she just couldn't help upping the ante for herself. You know, she just couldn't stop. So yes, she starts to sort of allow a rumor about herself to spread that she is the illegitimate daughter of Andrew Carnegie, who is the wealthiest man in the world, or at least one of the wealthiest men in the world. But he was a Scottish, you know, philanthropist, come over to America, and he had just sold his companies or something. So right when she started to say that she was his illegitimate daughter, he was even wealthier than he had ever been before. And she did it in an ingenious manner. She didn't, you know, announce it because no one would have believed her. She implied it, hinted at it, and she let the right people know who she knew would go tell other people. So she told this lawyer, oh, I need to go to New York on a business trip. Do you want to come along with me? Somehow she convinces him to come along. And she literally went to Carnegie's mansion and was like, just wait here in the carriage while I go into this mansion. And she goes in, and we don't know exactly what she did in there. I bet she chatted with the housekeeper and managed to kill some time. And then she came back out with a pile of important looking papers, which she had clearly had with her already. But, you know, she always had important looking papers around to convince people.
Yeah.
So she comes back out and, you know, she's kind of like, well, you know, these are, don't tell anyone, but these are money from Dad. And just like she knew what happened, the lawyer is like, of course I won't tell anyone. And then goes and tells all the important men in Cleveland, like, you won't believe who Cassie is related to. And she says she has, I forget the exact number, I want to say $11 million in a trust from him. So you should loan her freely because she's good for it, because she has this $11 million. And she does this specific swindle with a specific banker where she basically invites him to her house to look into her safe and see all the paperwork and the stocks and the bonds and the deeds and everything. He sees it. He sees her papers. He thinks they look legitimate. He leaves. And then she calls him up and she says something like, oh, I totally forgot to give you an itemized list of all my assets. Can you write that up for me? So the banker now is the one that makes the official paperwork for her. So he writes a list on his bank's letterhead that's like $11 million in stocks, you know, whatever. So it's like, it's almost like she conjures it up. It's almost real. She almost gets it to be real because a real banker declares on letterhead that she is good for it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just these tiny little steps, one after the other, and each one builds on the other. There's a guy I know here in Melbourne who, in Australia, who had his house, he lived at the back of a property, and the only way to access it was the back laneway. Okay. And there was no way of telling. He had to give everyone who came to his house directions. Uh-huh. And for his birthday, as a joke, his brother gave him a street sign. So he had his own street sign, which was, you know, cute. Funny. But then the street sign got damaged, and someone had damaged all the street signs on this street where they were. And so they, when they came to repair them, he said, oh, don't forget to repair this one. And so his fake one got replaced with a real official council one.
Oh.
And then he started to call the, you know, Google Maps and the, you know, Melways who make the, you know, the paper maps and councils, and just slowly, slowly over time, turned this fake street into a real street. And it's now on the maps.
It's so like that's you
the same can, sort of thing.
He created something real from something that didn't even exist.
And can we talk a little bit about Andrew Carnegie? Because my impression of him is that he wasn't just rich, but he was also one of the first celebrity rich people. You know, like,
oh,
sort of like, you know, like, I'm not sure if that's right, but that he was someone who would write articles and had, because he was so famous for his generosity, but also his belief in capitalism, and he'd write newspaper articles and people would have opinions on him. And it was sort of, I don't know, the difference between saying that, I can't even think of one, a random rich person that we've never heard of.
A public figure, is that what you mean? Oh, are you comparing it to like saying like Jeff Bezos is my dad?
Yeah, or Elon Musk or someone like that, opposed to when, you know, some of those sort of random, you know, billionaires who keep very quiet.
Yes, no, you're right. It was exactly like that. It was, everyone knew who he was. She was basically name dropping, very much so.
I was going to say, and he was also quite generous, is that right? He was
Yeah, he was known for his philanthropy. That seemed to be a core tenet of his money-making beliefs.
Yeah, that you can make a lot of money, but then there's okay, great. Yeah. So I guess that would that have played a big role in how people saw their relationship? It's like your father's not just rich, but he's also a good, generous, trustworthy, reliable.
I guess so. Yeah. I do think he was beloved. I'm sure some people hated him, but yeah,
of course.
Right, of course. But she's linking herself to someone who, in the public eye, is rich and good. Although let's not forget, she was saying she was his illegitimate daughter, so it wasn't. There was a oh, don't, you can't tell anyone. It wasn't like she was linking their names really publicly. But part of the con, and this is a lot of women in my book do this. It's like, they tell you something, but they tell you you have to keep it secret. Because, of course, if you don't keep it secret, they'll get found out to be lying. Yes.
That's a really stereotypical sort of thing you would imagine. Like, what skills do women have to use? It's like, gossip. Yeah. Those ladies and their gossip. Yes. They know how to wield a pair of gossip.
That's
right.
A good point.
Yeah. Okay. When does it crumble? I mean, does it just keep going for a while?
She kept them all at bay for a long time with various shows of wealth. She even hired actors to show that she was good for it. She was going to pay them back. But this businessman, Herbert B. Newton, finally sued her. She owed him $190,000, which I don't know how much that it would be today, but I'm guessing millions. That's a lot of money. And the lawsuit made its way into the papers of Cleveland. And then, all the other businessmen saw this little article and were just like, oh, wait a minute. She was conning me. So everyone suddenly kind of realized that she was a fraud. And it was quite the scandal. And she kept up her show until the end of innocence. One of my favorite anecdotes about her, she allowed herself to be seen sort of nobly and aggrievedly going into her lawyer's office, presumably to clear her name. And she didn't even have a lawyer there. She just scrambled up to the roof of the building and like hopped over onto the other building's roof and left. like a little, Aladdin or something.
Yeah.
She knew how things looked. She was very masterful at controlling how the public would see her. So she allowed herself to be seen going into this building because she knew it would look a certain way.
Yeah.
She scrambled out the back.
And that then, I mean, once it appeared in the paper, other people would have said it would have been a kind of emperor's new clothes situation of like the one person says, hey, what's the deal? And just
suddenly
everyone's calling in their debts.
Mm-hmm. Well, people theorize that not everyone did because these men were so embarrassed. Some of these businessmen are bankers. Like it's something like the amount of people who called in their debts, it couldn't have been all of the ones who actually were owed.
Yeah.
So, think about it. It's humiliating. You're the head of a bank. And this random Canadian doctor's wife, managed to get hundreds of thousands of dollars from you. So you can imagine how not everyone would publicly come forward or sue or take.
Yeah, particularly if you just work for the bank, if it's not your money, the idea, if I come forward, I'm going to lose my job and my reputation.
Mm, yeah.
What you said there about people being too embarrassed to come forward is still, one of the number one tools in any con artist's arsenal is just the fact that people don't want to admit they've been scammed.
And, yes,
lie to themselves and others to talk themselves out of that fact.
Absolutely.
So, was her husband on the hook for this? Did he have to pay back all this money and to pay back all of her loans?
I don't think so. Not that I know of, but he did kind of devolve into bankruptcy. I wasn't able, that was all I found out about his narrative after she was arrested. So I guess maybe he did end up paying. But she was found guilty and sentenced to 10 years in the penitentiary. So the strong arm of the law came down on her.
Right. Okay. Did he stick with her or did they divorce?
They didn't divorce that I know of. She didn't live long. She died in prison.
Oh, okay.
And she was only about 50. Yeah. So her story ends pretty quickly after she was found guilty.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do we know much about what Carnegie himself thought about this story? Surely he would have become aware of this great media circus.
So, he was totally aware of it. He even came to the trial.
Wow.
I think he was very good natured about the whole thing. He just told a journalist, smiling, that the whole thing just showed how good his credit was. Basically, how powerful his name was. Like, he was kind of flattered. He was like, wow, this whole circus just shows that if you drop my name, people assume you're good for it. So,
Sounds like a scene from a movie. Just every, you know, a crowded courthouse, and suddenly the richest man comes in, one whispering or pointing, and the judge banging the gavel.
It should be a movie.
Has the story?
Not that I've seen.
I'm gonna quickly look it up and say.
Quickly
always,
look it up if that will always, pitch it.
Here we go. I've got it right here. Okay, according to Wikipedia, which is very trustworthy on these subjects, there was a Canadian TV movie in 1985.
Okay.
And there was a TV series called Murdoch Mysteries did it. There was a feature film that's scheduled to begin shooting in 2020. So it was called The Duchess of Criminality was the working title of the film. So there we go. But it is one of those stories. And that if I was to think of female con artists, that would be of the sort of, you know, of history.
Yes.
That her name would be one, I think, one of the most famous.
Yes, I agree.
Why do you think she is one of the most famous? Like, why is she one that people do, want to tell the story of?
I would guess that linking her name to Andrew Carnegie's was a big part of it, you know, so that just instantly gives the story a boost. You don't just have to remember her and her crimes, but it's like, oh yeah, she was the one who pretended to be this super famous person's daughter. She also, the story was just so big at the time, and it really entered the culture at the time. Like, future swindlers for years were called Cassies or were compared to her. I searched through newspaper archives for, you know, the blank Cassie Chadwick. And for years after, you have the German Cassie Chadwick, the Chinese Cassie Chadwick, the Romanian Cassie Chadwick. Every time there's a female swindler, Cassie was brought up in the papers. So I think it was the scope of her cons made her trial and her capture a big newsworthy deal, and that made her enter the culture, and all that is why we still remember her today. Although I will say, not everyone remembers her, and the coverage of Anna Delvey and Elizabeth Holmes sometimes bugs me, because there's a lot of like, whoa, female con artists, you know, and I very rarely see any other female con artists from the past brought up when we're talking about these women. Instead, people bring up Bernie Madoff and Charles Ponzi, you know.
So, yeah.
Like, Anna Delvey wasn't called the German-Russian Cassie Chadwick, you know.
I think that speaks then, I think, to that idea of that we like to, with these types of women, like, brand, and we do this with, like, everyone, but she's not just a con artist, she's a female con artist, you know, and so she'll be perhaps spoken about in maybe in terms of other female con artists, but never in the same sort of breadth as people who perhaps made less money
Like Bernie Madoff doesn't get compared to Cassie Chadwick, you mean?
No, no.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
He's not going to be not called the male, the male Cassie Chadwick.
It never goes that way.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, you know, like I mean, they do a lot of stuff in the arts, and it's always, you know, women authors, women comedians, women magicians. It's never male. So that's sadly not something that is just restricted to con artists, I guess.
I just Googled the male Cassie Chadwick and it says no results found for the male Cassie Chadwick.
Fair enough. Fair enough. There we go. Well, there's a listener out there who wants to go out and start a life of crime and maybe one day be referred to as the male Cassie Chadwick.
Yes.
Wonderful. So she ended up dying in prison. Mm-hmm. I assume penniless and mm-hmm. you know, her reputation in tatters and that mm-hmm. of her husband as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Aside from just her name being used just as shorthand for being a con artist, you know, female con artist. Mm-hmm. Has there been much other legacy to her story? Has there been much else mm-hmm. that's been said about her?
At the time, there were a lot of repercussions. You know, I believe a bank closed entirely and the banker took to his bed and died pretty much. But in terms of throughout the next 100 years, no, I mean, as we just discussed, you know, there hasn't even been like much of a big, there's never been a big Hollywood production about her or anything like that. Yeah, I would say it has stuck around more as a curiosity. It's an interesting story, but she's seen as more of just a quirky, wild character in history's footnotes rather than a like, you know, oh, this changed the way we do business. Or like in the case of Charles Ponzi, well, now we have a word for these schemes. We're going to call them Ponzi schemes, you know?
Now this story and the story of a bunch of other female con artists, women con artists can be found in Confident Women, mm-hmm. which can be found everywhere. But you also have Lady Killers as well. A more violent book.
Lady Killers, a serial killer book. So that's all female serial killers.
Now, and this sometimes be a difficult question for authors, but what are you working on next?
Oh, yes. Always a difficult question. Well, right now, not too much. I am sort of peeking into a potential podcast project about where all the money is, as you know.
Of course, absolutely.
Riches. About maybe some women who operate underground, mm-hmm. whatever that means. So I'm in the research stage for that, aka not finding anything and feeling despair.
I know that feeling. That like, yes. What am I doing? Why am I down here? But that's where you find the gold, right?
Yes, so yes.
It's got to dig down deep.
Exactly.
Well, if people want to find out more, they can head to your website at torytelfer.com.
Yes, perfect.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being on Scammapalooza.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.